We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 230. Today, Scott is day-to-day. He's coming back from New Orleans, and he's had a hell of a weekend. So Dom is subbing in. Dom, what's up?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, it's always good to come on right after a Yankees walk-off victory and with the way they've been playing, right?
Perfect timing. They're magic right now.
It's almost like they've got this feeling where all these comebacks, whether it be Friday's game, Sunday's game, or even the games in Houston, like, you don't see those in a whole season, never mind in 5 or 6 days.
Yeah, it's truly an incredible little run that they're on, and hopefully they can keep it up. I mean, winning 15 out of 16 is an incredible feat, so just got to keep rolling. And the expectation for them to win baseball games is there right now, and they're executing on all different levels. They have a million different ways to beat you. Seems like it's a different way to beat you every night, so it's amazing.
It is. We're going to get into everything, but before we do, I want to give away the signed Brian Hoke books, The Baby Bombers. We ran the contest starting on Thursday on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We had a ton of people submit. Thank you to everybody who did so. So the winners on Twitter, we have Simone. Her handle is at Kenya_Simone17. Congratulations. You've won yourself a copy of Brian's book. Facebook is Garrett Cagna. Again, Garrett Cagna. And then Instagram, MegCall_. So those three people, here's how you claim your book. DM me or Bronx Pinstripes or Yankees Podcast or message Facebook by this Thursday to claim your book. If you do not claim your book by Thursday, I might just keep it or I'll give it away to somebody else. Again, thank you to everybody who submitted, and thank you to Brian for giving us those giveaways. It's an awesome book. I have a copy myself. So also May 26th, everybody knows about it by now. The Yankees will be playing the Angels. Dom, you going to be there May 26th?
I will. Absolutely.
It's going to be, are you going to be graduated at that point?
I will be graduated. Yeah.
You nervous?
7 days prior to that, actually.
You nervous about graduating? Is everything hitting you?
It is starting to hit me. Really, this past weekend, it's just kind of starting to hit me. Finals week this week, and then, senior week, and I'll be drinking probably as much as Scott did. So we'll see.
Well, that's, you can handle it better as a 22-year-old kid. I don't know, Scott, he's got that old man body. It's going to be tough for him to rebound. Again, though, May 26th for $68, you get the pregame party at the brewery with one free beer included. We're going to be there. There's going to be a food truck there. You get a t-shirt, plus you get the game ticket in section 205 or 206 to take on the Angels. It's going to be an awesome time. It's our second event of the season. Then the one after that is going to be June 29th against the Red Sox. That's also going to be fun. That's a primo game, so look out for that one too. And if you want to go to the stadium this week, if you want to buy tickets, it's going to be a tough ticket to get against the Red Sox, but buying tickets is easier with SeatGeek. It's the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for last-minute deals, planning a night out with friends, or you need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, and they're fully guaranteed. There is nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action. I've used SeatGeek a number of times to go to Yankees games and also a Broadway show. It's very easy to use. The app is easy. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find you amazing deals. It also tells you how to get the most bang for your buck because it gives you a color coding. So it's easy to see. Red, do not buy that ticket. Green, go and buy that ticket. It's very easy to use. Make it your go-to app for finding the best deals for every type of ticket. From sports and concerts to comedy and theater, call to action here is you must use Bronx today if you download the app to get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Again, download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code Bronx, and you get $20 off your first purchase, which will get you a beer and a half maybe at Yankee Stadium, which is always a good thing. You said it at the top, 15-1, and this team is just rolling on all cylinders right now. Pitching, offense, they're doing it every single way. And when they're not, when things go wrong, like we saw on Sunday, they somehow fight back because there's no quit in this team.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And you just look at Saturday's game and look at the guys that they had out. You had Sanchez on the bench. You had Didi on the bench. You had Judge and Stanton go combined 0-for-8 with 5 Ks. And Gray as a starter, who obviously has been a little shaky here in the early going, they still get the win 5-2. So it's just guys stepping up like Torres today. Andujar has been good. Like, you name it. Just unbelievable all around.
Yeah, the road trip that they went on to the Angels in Houston, everyone was saying this is a key road trip. Let's see how they do, because they got back on track against Minnesota, but the Yankees have treated Minnesota like the little brother for forever. So what are they going to do against the Angels and specifically Houston? And after losing that first game in Houston, they came back and took that series on the road. They embarrassed the Houston bullpen, especially Ken Giles. And then they came home and sweep Cleveland, also one of the teams that is expected to be there at the end of the year.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's unbelievable. And then Germán, man, he looks legit. I know it's a small sample size, but he went up against two of the two maybe top contenders in Houston and Cleveland, and he balled out. He was awesome today, and he was awesome in Houston. So we love it.
Between the four relief innings of shutout ball and then the six no-hit innings today against Cleveland, it's 10 dominant innings we saw for him. I loved the fastball changeup combination he was throwing. He's got that mid-90s fastball with a little bit of two-seam movement on it, and then the changeup, which is the same arm action, the same angle, but it's just 8-9 miles an hour slower. It was really devastating today.
Yeah, also his curveball too. He used that to get ahead in counts early on, and then that was really the strikeout pitch. I know he had a nice K of Brantley on that curveball. He caught Kipnis looking on it early on in the game. So if you're throwing three pitches, you're locating all of them. Hey, I like the chances there.
And you can't really blame Boone. I mean, that's a tough spot, right? The kid's got a no-hitter going. He was already on his 75 to 80 pitch limit no matter what because he's not stretched out. I believe, what did Michael Kay say? His previous high was 61 pitches this season before this. So they're not going to have him throw 100 pitches out there. It was six innings. That was probably the most you were going to get out of him. And then Boone's kind of in a no-win situation after that because Betances had the really dominant seventh inning. But then what do you use in the eighth? Do you use Betances for a second inning, which is always an adventure? Do you use Shreve, who couldn't get an out in a 5-0 game on Friday? You don't go to Holder or AJ Cole or anybody like that. So it's kind of a catch-22 for Boone at that point.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we're spoiled with this bullpen, and this is really where you miss a guy like Tommy Kahnle, because he would have filled in probably in that seventh inning, and then you go Betances with Green and Robertson unavailable. But anytime Betances has to throw more than 25 pitches and extend north of an inning, I get really nervous because I really don't think he can give you that kind of length. You know what I mean?
No, I do, and that's – he – I guess if you look back at his numbers from 2014, I believe he threw 90 innings in like 70 relief appearances. So very often he went past the one inning mark. But we know last year and this year, it just has not been working for him. When, like you said, he goes over 25 pitches or he has to rest for whatever reason, when he comes back out, he's not as sharp. I don't blame Betances, and I don't even blame Boone for that situation. I actually kind of blame Chase and Shreve for that, because he came in a 5-0 game on Friday, and he couldn't throw strikes. He gives up a 3-run home run to Bradley Zimmer, who's the number 9 hitter. And then Boone has to pull him and throw Robertson and Chapman, who I know both didn't look that great on Friday. We'll get to that game. But the fact that they couldn't just coast in that 5-0 game kind of came back to bite him in the ass on Sunday.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I guess the only gripe that I would have, though, is bringing in Holder when it was in kind of desperation mode when he let those two guys on to start the inning. I think that should have been the hook right there. That's really the only gripe I have with any of Boone's decisions today. I would have taken that gamble, too, with Betances there. I feel like you just have to. Like you said, Shreve sucked on Friday, but then he wound up retiring the Indians in order in the ninth. So.
Yeah, of course he has a clean inning in the ninth inning to shut me up. But then, so if you don't go to Holder, who do you go to in the eighth?
I would have went to Shreve, I think, is okay. What I was gonna say. Yeah.
So I forget who was up. Was it a bunch of right-handed hitters coming up?
I believe so.
Yeah, I understand Shreve's splits aren't necessarily the classic lefty splits because he has a split finger fastball, which works well against righties as well, kind of neutralizes the righties. But yeah, if you want to say Shreve instead of Holder just for the fact that Shreve before Friday had a good season, fine. But the last thing Boone remembers is Shreve not being able to get an out against this exact lineup.
Yeah, he actually said prior to the game, one of the writers I follow for The Athletic, Lindsay Adler, she said that Boone said to her, I guess, before the game that he was trying to stay away from a couple guys in the pen today, but wouldn't say who. So,
well, it was obviously Green and Robertson because Green threw two innings on Saturday, so he wasn't going to come back out. Green looked phenomenal on Saturday. And then Robertson threw 2 days in a row, and I believe it was like four out of the last 6 days or something like that.
Yeah, and then you can just give them a double off day here coming up, which is perfect with the Sox coming to town.
You could have almost like forgiven the Yankees for losing today. They've got a kid who's never started before. They've got a short bullpen, and they're going, and they already took two out of three from one of the best teams in the league. Yet they still find a way and fight back. In the eighth inning, they force Cody Allen to throw 24 pitches in the eighth inning. And you just know that's going to play a factor in the ninth inning, and it immediately did.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I really don't expect this team to lose ever again.
So what would that make their record, like 150-10? 152-10? I think that would put them in a good position to get home field advantage.
Yeah, I would say so. Although that's going to be a battle. I'm really stoked for the series coming up. But yeah, back to the eighth inning with Allen working up his pitch count. Guardy working a good at bat. Have to have faith in Guardy. He's been on the team actually since I was 12 years old. So
God.
I'll never give up on Guardy. He's my dude, and I think he's had a couple instances in a couple games where he's hit the ball right on the screws. So I think the 200. Stat line, that is the first thing that jumps out at you right away. You start questioning like, oh man, we need Frazier back. We need, you know, to bench him or whatever. But I mean, in a clutch situation, like that's the guy you want up there. He started that whole rally.
I agree. And he had a great at bat. It was a long at bat to get to Allen. Remember that at bat he had in game five of the ALDS off Allen?
So yes, yes.
He clearly has confidence against that guy. I totally agree with you. We talked about this a couple episodes ago where Gardner's hitting into some bad luck. His on-base percentage is still strong. He's still seeing a ton of pitches and walking, which is what you want out of a leadoff hitter. And May and June are usually his best months. If you remember the May and June he had last year, he hit a ton of home runs. So we don't need Gardner to hit home runs, but he has historically been good in those months. And Judge gets the double, and then the ninth inning with Hicks and Walker to tie the game. And then I kind of second-guess not bunting, but none of it really matters because what are we saying second-guessing? Because Gleyber Torres, who has been freaking ridiculous, like somehow this kid was undersold. I don't know how he was undersold. I don't know how he was underhyped because he was probably the most hyped Yankees prospect since I've been alive, and he's living up to every expectation.
Yeah, and he was undersold defensively, specifically from scouts. And really, for me, that's the most impressive aspect of his game right now for me. I mean, he made two plays today that were ridiculous, ranging to his right and then ranging to his left. He just has unbelievable range, unbelievable arm. He's going to be a bona fide stud very soon. The kid's unbelievable.
And the one thing that at least through Friday you could say is, well, he's not hitting for power yet. The power is going to come as he matures as a hitter and frankly probably gets a little stronger as a person. But then he hit his first home run on Friday. It was a line shot to left center field. And then he pummeled that ball to center field today. It was windy and that ball still went out 400 plus feet.
Yeah, and that's after taking a couple cruddy at-bats. He took some shitty at-bats early on in that game, and then he stayed focused and he was confident and he saw a good pitch to drive, which is all you can ask from a 21-year-old kid. You know, I would forgive him if he got up there and struck out in that big spot because he is a 21-year-old kid. He just had a couple bad ABs, but he didn't let it get to him, which is an amazing sign and truly speaks to the talent he has.
He's probably the best defensive second baseman they've had since Robbie Cano.
Yeah, yeah. I saw Josie McFly tweeted Gleyber Cano today.
Well,
I thought that was funny.
He's buttery smooth like Cano was, ranging to his right. Like you said, he's ranging to his right, and he's got sort of that flip throw. I mean, yep. Cano's arm was maybe the best second baseman's arm I've ever seen, because he could make that throw from center field and it would be there chest high. Gleyber actually short hopped the one today, but he does have that sort of smooth moves in the field. Yankees are 14-1 in the 15 games since he's played with them, which, I mean, the kid just doesn't know how to lose, so that's a good sign as well. Is there anything about this kid that you think he can improve on right now?
No, not
well,
really.
Well, I see you have some notes in here that say maybe he can improve on something.
Yeah, the O swing percentage is a little bit high comparatively to, like, the other guys. Stanton is like high 20s, even like Gary's in the low 30s, I think. His O swing percentage is 39, but that could just be because of anxious, because he's nervous, because he's pushing maybe a little bit, but that's only in 52 plate appearances, and I think that's something he'll probably lower with more reps and as he matures as a hitter in his approach and really just seeing pitches.
And that's percent that you swing of pitches outside of the zone.
Outside the zone, correct, yeah.
Because you got to remember, we're starting to get more into the nerdy stats. Scott's more of he was always just the eye test guy. So now we're starting to bring in some more sabermetrics here. So we got to explain what the O-swing percentage is.
Have to.
It was probably Sunday's game, maybe the wildest game of the year so far, even though Thursday's game had that title for a few days. I thought that was the best win of the season. Tanaka was great through six innings. Kind of a soft rally off of him in the seventh inning. And then that joke of a replay that turned some things around where Bregman said he got hit. He sold it. It ended up not being overturned, even though the super slow-mo zoomed in at like a billion pixels showed he did not get hit. So I don't know what MLB replay guys are doing, but I don't know how they could have said, yeah, that ball hit Bregman.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And that's not the first time that they've messed up a replay, right?
No, certainly not. Yeah. I remember the Tyler. There was one with Tyler Austin where
there was a play at first, right?
Yeah, I think it was against Toronto, maybe, where the Smoke's foot was like 6 inches off the bag at least, and it was very clear on the replay, and they didn't overturn it. So that's why it's like with replay, it takes a few minutes. They've got so it's always frustrating because the game comes to a screeching halt. But if they get the decision right, you can at least live with it. When they don't get the decision right, it's just what's it for? Let's just move on.
Yeah, no. And now on every close play, like every player thinks that the call went in their favor. Like today, Alonso was pointing like, oh, like that was foul, and that ball landed like right on the line. That was the ball that Didi hit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In maybe the sixth or seventh.
That probably should have been a hit too. I don't know why they called that an error.
Yeah, that I thought that probably should have been a hit too, but he didn't get the luck of the draw there. But I mean, just by and large, the replay slows down the game because every player thinks that they're right, and then the manager has to be like, okay, wait, and then that holds up the game even further, even if it's a clear-cut call. And then it goes to the replay, and then they can't even get it right. So, and it takes 5 minutes every time.
That's a really good point. You're right. Every player thinks that they were safe or they caught the ball or whatever it may be. And then you, as a manager, when all of your guys always say that, no, I got it, you kind of can't trust them at that point. Because you remember when Sanchez last year in the playoffs in game two of the ALDS said that ball did not, was it Lindor at the plate with the hit by pitch in that key situation that Girardi didn't challenge? Sanchez said it did not hit him. Girardi didn't trust his catcher on that point. But if your catcher or whoever is always saying, no, challenge it, then you can't really trust your guys.
No, exactly. So that's a big aspect of it. That's probably the best problem because like 99% of the time, like they're not going to get the replay wrong. I guess percentage wise this year, that's a little off, but I mean, usually they're going to get the call right if they do go and it does need to be reviewed and the call on the field isn't correct. But every time that happens and a player is like, has to hold up the game because he thinks that he's right is just ridiculous and slowing down the games.
And who knows really how that inning would have turned out in Houston, because it would have been a wild pitch and it would have been second and third with Bregman up and no out. So it actually may have been even worse for the Yankees. Whereas Chad Green comes in, he gives up he allows the game to be tied at that point. And then the Astros take the lead, and then he has a bad inning when he gives up the long home run to Correa. So Chad Green kind of did not look like Chad Green. in that Houston game. But that's when the Yankees came back again against the Houston bullpen. They probably should have left Davinsky in. They bring in Will Harris and Brad Peacock because Ken Giles had a broken jaw, which he broke himself, and is just too fragile to be put into the game. If I'm Houston, I'm shitting myself about potentially facing the Yankees or the Red Sox or the or whoever in the playoffs with Ken Giles in that bullpen. Like, good luck.
Yeah, the bullpen down there is a dumpster fire. They're going to have to go get somebody at the deadline. I think they're going to really try to pursue Zach Britton from Baltimore. Yeah. I think that would be a wise decision for them. They probably have a prospect or two to dish off, I would say.
Unless they just go, let's just use starters for relievers again, because that worked for them last year.
No, I know. I know. So we'll see what happens with them. But once you get their starter out of the game, they're just the least imposing bullpen ever.
Yeah. Literally ever. And the Yankees pitching as a whole held them down too. And I don't expect that to always happen, because I still think that is, if that is one of the best offenses in the league, I think the Yankees probably, they have been the best. They've scored the most runs, but you think Houston's going to be there as well. So CeCe comes back on Friday night and is just absolutely dominant again. He lowered his ERA to 1.39 and he's got a 0.87 whip. I don't know, but CeCe's just getting better with every start he goes out there.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. And he's really just, his whole process of how he's evolved as a finesse pitcher, like he's getting nowhere near the amount of Ks that he used to. He's third all time, though, amongst lefties for Ks. So he had to make the adjustment to pitch to contact more. And listen, 28.6% of the contact off CC classified as being soft. I think he has it all figured out now, and he is awesome to watch.
Yeah, I was looking up those numbers over the weekend, and every season, at least the last 3 years, that soft contact percentage has gone up and up. And you can't say, well, his stuff is getting better. So it's better location, it's better movement, it's smarter pitching. He's using his cutter effectively against righties. He's using his backdoor breaking ball against righties. He's keeping lefties off balance. And if you're a hitter, Fangraphs considers if you're a hitter and you have 25% plus of your contact as soft, that means you've been awful. So Sabathia has held hitters to an awful contact exit velo, I guess.
Yeah, and listen, the more soft contact you get obviously leads to a lower BABIP. That's another batting average on balls in play.
Oh, we covered that. We covered that last week.
Yeah, no, I know. We're not going to get into that segment mention today.
you don't need to define every one of them. Some of them we've already defined on this show.
True.
Yeah, Sabathia should have had an easy win. And Duhar ends up walking it off on Friday. Between Duhar and Glaber, it's just been unreal with those
just
two.
Just huge hits.
Yeah, huge hits. Good defensive plays. They look like they belong. That was the one thing I was worried about, was I don't think the Yankees want to go into the season with a rookie at third and a rookie at second base. And they didn't, because they signed Neil Walker. They traded for Brandon Drury. But here we are. By 2 weeks into the season, Drury was hurt and Walker was doing nothing. They had Andujar up. Glaber came up a couple weeks later. And right now, I don't know how you take those two guys out of the lineup.
Yeah, I really don't think it's going to be that much of a dilemma when Drury gets healthy, really, to be honest with you. They're just the starters there. They're the guys there right now. Then there's no doubt about it.
So what do you do?
You know, it's interesting, and I guess we have a mailbag about that, right? Do we?
We get that mailbag a ton, but because Brian Cashman said over the weekend that Neil Walker's job and his roster spot is not in jeopardy.
Right, which is interesting.
It's interesting because he seems like the easy guy to cut because it's a 1 year deal. He's a veteran guy. You don't really have any allegiance to Neil Walker. But like when Brandon Drury comes back, I think someone's going to go down. And if Neil Walker stays on the team, then it's probably Tyler Austin who goes down. Because what does that say to your organization if you take Andujar out of the lineup right now? Because the kid has done nothing but produce.
Yeah, no, you can't do that. Somebody tweeted actually at us and they were like, what object will you break in your house if Andujar gets sent down?
Yeah. What would you break?
Probably not like a table, but I would probably throw a chair. I think that would be warranted.
You got enough chairs. Yeah, just watch out for the TV, because if you break a TV, then you can't watch the games.
Right, exactly. But I think Cashman's logic behind keeping Walker and committing to that is just Tyler Austin and Greg Bird being unreliable in terms of whether they can stay on the field.
Totally.
Austin had this a hip jam.
Yeah. He jammed his
hip. What does that even mean?
He jammed his hip by falling on the ground for a ground ball in Houston, and he missed two games because of it.
Yeah. I think Austin and Bird's health issues are really what's going to keep Walker on this team. Listen, Walker had a big, big hit today, though, and he's starting to take some better at-bats. So I think I'd be cool with keeping Walker and sending Austin down once Bird is back.
Yeah, this is Austin's last year of options, and he definitely seems like the odd man out. And it sucks because I think I saw today on the broadcast he's leading all of rookies in home runs and RBIs.
Is he really?
Yeah, I mean, I still don't think it's tough to consider him a rookie because you're like, well, he's debuted in 2016.
Yeah, the fact that he's still a rookie is crazy.
In 2018, but he's never qualified for the rookie, whatever it is, 50,
right.
50, I think it's 50 games or something like that. 50, it's 100 plate appearances. Who knows what it is? But he's never qualified, and he's not going to be, well, let's put it this way. He's not going to be leading those categories for long with the way Glaber and Duhar are playing.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. We should just definitely keep him up for this week with the Sox coming up so he can fight again, maybe.
Does we see any retribution?
It's hard to say, but I certainly wouldn't rule it out. But I guess we'll find out soon. I'm excited.
This is, the Red Sox have been playing pretty much the last 2 weeks. They've been playing around 500 ball. And the Yankees, because they've gone 15-1 of their game back at this point, who knows what the, I don't know. We're recording during the Red Sox game on Sunday, so we don't know what that's going to be. But these two teams are going to be duking it out till the bitter end. So I'm so excited for that because, this, frankly, it's just more exciting when those two teams are good. But back to the Walker thing. Yeah, he's still hitting under 200. He had two hits on Friday. He had the game-tying hit on Sunday. So I especially think, though, his roster spot is secure until Bird comes back. But Bird, there will be a point where you have to send another guy down when Bird returns.
Right, right.
So, yeah, the easy thing to do is send Tyler Austin down when Brandon Drury comes back. But what about when Greg Bird comes back and you have to decide between Neil Walker, Gleyber Torres, and Duhar?
Yeah. I mean, you got to cut Walker or send him down.
Right.
Because there's just no way. There's no way Duhar or Torres is getting sent down. They are staying for the duration of the year unless they get hurt and have to do a rehab stint.
Right. And someone might get hurt to just solve the problem because that seems to always happen. But let's hope that doesn't happen. Sonny Gray, another step forward on Saturday. Romine was back catching him. And you kind of saw the impact on the lineup because you had Romine and Torres in there batting eighth and ninth. Yankees were still able to get the win, so it didn't make that much of a difference. But Sonny Gray, 6 innings, 2 runs, 4 hits, 7 strikeouts, 2 walks, and 93 pitches. So that makes 2 strong outings in a row for Sonny Gray of 6 innings.
Yeah, we love to see that. And I think dating back to even when he was traded to the Yankees, it was just him being inefficient. And I'm not sure if that was about his confidence, but at the end of the day, I really think it was. Earlier on this year, in those starts that he made that were bad, he was just not attacking hitters. And every time you looked up, it was 2-0, it was 2-1, it was 3-1. Like, he was in an uphill battle in every plate appearance. So Boone, I think, was, happy with the way things have gone. And he said that he feels like he's to the point where he's almost back. So that's pretty encouraging. And I think it's all about confidence for Gray. And I think that if he's confident, then he's going to be the guy that he was in Oakland back in like 2014, 2015, where he was like a legit one. So I don't think he's a one on this team, obviously, but at his best, at his ceiling, like, he's a legit two guy on any team, I think.
Yeah. And that's what we all thought he was going to be this year. And he has not done that yet. And it's kind of scary to think about if he can get back to that, what this team could be, because we do have a mailbag about the starting pitching, which we'll get into specific numbers and if the Yankees are going to trade somebody. But if Sonny Gray could totally turn this whole rotation and the look of this rotation around, and he threw 93 pitches, like I said, on Saturday. The Yankees also had a short bullpen then because Chapman was not available. That's why you saw Chad Green have to go 2 innings and Robertson close. I think if maybe we're a month ahead from now and Sonny Gray has 3, 4, 5 more good starts under his belt, we may have seen him come back out for the 7th inning and go over 100 pitches.
Yeah, no doubt. Without a doubt.
It's kind of tough. I mean, it's funny because we're analyzing things. Everything just ends with, yeah, this has been really good.
Yeah, no, I know. It's the same conclusion every time because every facet of this team is just working right now. It's unbelievable.
It's fun, but it's also difficult to podcast when the Yankees just keep winning.
Yeah, it's tough to find anything to nitpick, really.
Want to take a second, guys, to tell you about ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Every business needs great people, and a better way to find them is with ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized the way that you will find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate through the site in just one day. That is very quick, so there's no reason not to try ZipRecruiter. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Right now, listeners of the Bronx Pinstripe Show can try ZipRecruiter for free. That is right, for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Bronx. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Bronx. One more time, ZipRecruiter.com/Bronx. It's the smartest way to hire. Let's give away a t-shirt. So, thank you guys for rating and reviewing the podcast. We are well up over 1,000. Like we say every week, it is how it helps us out immensely. It's how the iTunes, it bumps us up in the iTunes rankings. It allows more people to find the show. Dom, have you even reviewed the show?
I have. I left a couple fake reviews. 5 stars.
Don't say that.
No, I'm kidding.
So the winner is JMR Hodis 88. He says, hi guys, love the podcast. I'm currently stuck in the middle of nowhere where I was delivering pizza, and as I was backing out of the driveway, I got stuck in a divot and am completely sideways. I've been stuck out here for over an hour and a half, but I'm listening to your podcast and it's making the situation a whole lot better. Thanks guys, and go Yanks. I finally am out after an hour and a half. Jarrett Rhodes is who left that. That might be a fake one, that might be a real one. Either way, it made me laugh. So DM us to get your t-shirt. Let's get to mailbag questions. First one is from Jason Edwards on Twitter at JLog76. He says, what happens if Domingo Germán sucks? Do we see Justice Sheffield or a trade? So, Dom, did Germán suck today?
He did not suck. He actually threw 6 no-hit innings, 9 Ks, 2 walks. He was money. He had the 3 pitches working, like we mentioned earlier, and he's looking like he can fill the void for Montgomery here right now.
It is. It's kind of scary. What his stuff is scary because he, like you said, no hits through 6 innings. He got 10 swings and misses in his first 50 pitches, which indicates electric stuff. And as he gets more stretched out, he would have gone deeper in that game. He really does have with the 3 pitches, like Cone was saying, has really, really strong stuff. So they may have found themselves a diamond in the rough here.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I kind of hope next start, if he's dealing again, I would like to see him get extended and maybe on a 100-pitch leash as opposed to an 85-pitch leash.
They will. They'll work him up there at the very least. And I have no problem. I agreed with the move to pull him. His health is more important than a no-hitter. I don't think no-hitters are even that impressive anymore because I don't know if you've noticed, but every day it seems like there's a no-hitter going on. There were 2 today at the same time where it was a no-hit watch past the 6th inning. It's just baseball today where there are people just making less contact.
Yeah, strikeout percentages have been on the up and up like every year. They increase. And I think this year, although it's obviously a month, I think it's up like 2% from last year, something ridiculous like that. So just a lot of Ks. So,
and I mean, perfect games, I think, are still sort of that elite thing where if you throw a perfect game, that's amazing. I would rather, though, strike out 20 guys than throw a no-hitter.
Yeah. I mean, the perfect game is the perfect game, though. You know what I mean? Like,
no,
27 up, 27 down is...
No, I'm saying perfect games are probably the pinnacle. But then you've got the 20 strikeout game, which I think is now... That is more rare and has always been more rare than a no-hitter.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. Seeing a guy strike out 20 dudes is unreal.
Yeah.
Sev could do that this year. I could see that happening.
Yeah, because he's got the stuff where it still plays in the 8th and 9th inning, where he's still throwing gas.
The dude's throwing 100 miles an hour in the 9th.
Germán obviously is going to get another start. there, I think even if he did suck today, as Jason said, what if he sucks? I think he would have gotten a couple more starts because Justice Sheffield just got promoted to AAA. He just made his first start on Sunday against Pawtucket. He went 4 2/3 innings, 4 hits, 2 runs, 4 walks, 6 strikeouts. He had a 32-pitch first inning where he gave up a couple runs. He settled in, struck out 4 in a row at one point, but he still has a lot of developing to do. He's got a lot of learning to do. I mean, they're not going to just have a kid jump from AA to the majors when he is, I mean, Sheffield's their number 3 overall prospect. He's number 46 in baseball. You don't want to rush this kid. You want to let this kid develop, and when he's called up, you want him to be in the rotation for good.
Yeah, he was owning in AA. 5 starts, 2.25 ERA, 39 Ks, a 1.63 batting average against, a 1.07 WHIP. Obviously, owning it earns the promotion to AAA. But I mean, the last thing they want to do, even if Germán let up 10 runs today, the last thing they want to do is bring up Justice Sheffield and rush him.
Exactly. Josh Rogers, I could see as the next guy called up from Scranton. He's made 6 starts. He has a 3.15 ERA. He's not going to dominate anybody, but he's somebody that you could at least hopefully get 5 innings out of, and maybe he can get a solid start. Chance Adams has not proved that he's ready for the major leagues yet, so until he does, we're not going to see him. Thanks, Jason, for the mailbag. What do we have next, Tom?
We have a mailbag from Josh Pierson, at Pierson_Josh. The Yankees starters have been pitching very well over the last 2 weeks. Do you believe the rotation we have now with Montgomery healthy is the rotation we take to the postseason, or does Cashman make a trade for a starter?
The starters have been absolutely ridiculous on this 16-game stretch. 95 innings, a 1.89 ERA. They're averaging 6 innings, and that's even with Montgomery's 1-inning injury game. So take that out, and they're averaging closer to 6.1, 6.2 innings, which is, I mean, more than enough with what this bullpen can bring you.
Yeah, but I do think at some point, depending on what, like, let's play hypothetical here. Say like God forbid, like Sev, Gray, CeCe, Tanaka, say one of them goes down, like then you definitely have to go get a starter. But I mean, if Gray can pick it back up, if Germán can fill the void for Montgomery, if Montgomery can come back and pitch well, and like you have to assess this all before the deadline. So it's hard. And I don't really know if the market's there for it. Like there's nobody that like jumps off like, oh, he's the guy to get this year. That's on a bad team, but it's a bona fide ace. You know what I mean?
I agree. And even though the starters have been elite over the last 16 games and one of the biggest reasons why they're on this run, I still think they need another starting pitcher. And I think that their decision to not do it over the winter was because the price was too high. They didn't like the asking price on Gerrit Cole. Turns out that asking price may have been worth it with the way Cole is pitching, but whatever, that's water under the bridge. The asking price for Michael Fulmer from Detroit was way too high, so Cashman passed on that. I think he's going to wait and see what the team really needs in June and July like he did last year. And maybe there's another Sonny Gray type guy out there where they can trade some prospects out of their system that you don't say, shit, I can't believe we traded those guys.
Yeah, no, definitely. And then I think the next question from this guy, Richard, kind of delves into the market.
All right, yeah, let's get into it. So Richard Granger at @RichardGranger_ says, do you see the Yankees trading Aaron Hicks to make space for Frazier? Frazier is younger with a high upside, and Hicks might be able to pull quality depth for the rotation. What do you think the Yanks would target? So quickly on some guys I thought of that may be on the market. So as I just mentioned, Michael Fulmer, Detroit stinks, and they're going to stink for a long time. It all depends on what Detroit's asking for. Cole Hamels is out there. Texas is in last place right now. Hamels making $20 million with a team option next year and a vesting option for $24 million and a $6 million buyout. I can't imagine Texas wants to pay that next year. So I could see him getting dealt. A lot of people are talking about Mad Bum. Bumgarner getting dealt because San Francisco has not gotten off to the start they were hoping for. Bumgarner's also recovering from that injury, broken finger. So, I mean, those are three, I guess, bigger name guys that might be on the market.
Yeah, and all three of those teams, I think, are kind of in shambles. The Giants are, maybe they can turn it around, but if they don't, then that would be really interesting. I feel like Bumgarner just hasn't been healthy, really, since the World Series where he was just bawling out.
Yeah, but he's still that name where if you...
No, of course.
And who knows, maybe for a guy like Hamels and Bumgarner, you put him on the Yankees in a pennant race and you might kind of get that same turnaround that Astros got out of Verlander last year.
No, of course. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, listen, if the deal is right, then I say do it 100%, even given the current circumstance we have now with everybody healthy. Why not? You know, you can never have enough pitching.
But with all three of those guys, it's going to cost prospects, because it's not like right. A situation with Verlander where the only reason the Astros were really able to get him is because they agreed to take a big portion of his salary. These guys, Hamels is going to be a free agent with an option. Like I said, Bumgarner, I still think has some solid years left in him, and same with Fulmer. He's still young. So all of those teams are going to be asking for top prospects. Like, they might be asking for Justin Sheffield. They'll probably be asking for Clint Frazier.
Probably asking for Frazier and Sheffield, I would say. Because I would say at this point that Andujar and Torres are no trade clause. There's just no way they're going to get that. So it would probably have to be Frazier or Sheffield to get one of those names back, I would say.
Gleyber has always been on the no trade list for Cashman. I still think that Andujar would be moved if Cashman likes the deal enough. But I think now you'd see a lot of fans call bullshit on that.
Yeah, no, definitely. And then in regards to this question, do we see the Yanks trading Hicks? I don't think so, right? There's no way Hicks is getting traded.
For two reasons. One, I think they really, really like him in center field. I think he showed, you know, his average is only .225, but his on base is .345. So he's showing discipline. You know, he went on the DL. That's a big problem with him. He does get injured, but he has great defense in center field. He's a switch hitter. They like him in the lineup. I mean, Boone likes him so much, he batted him third on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And for the second reason, like, I just don't think Hicks is going to return you that much.
Yeah, no, he probably won't. I think he's like 30. Obviously, he was a first-round draft pick in Minnesota back in 2008, actually. But if he's a guy that can give you 20 homers and play well above average defense in center field, like, that's not something you just give away.
Yeah,
especially if the return isn't going to be good, obviously.
He's 28 years old, turning 29 in October. So, okay. But your point is kind of still valid, that I just don't think a team looks at Aaron Hicks and says, yeah, let me give up a good starting pitcher for Aaron Hicks. They'd consider it for Clint Frazier.
Right. And in terms of stock, Frazier obviously has way more, but you don't know what he's going to give you as a major leaguer. That's as a regular everyday major leaguer. You know what I mean?
He kind of got a shot last year, but he still showed some growing pains. I mean, he had that concussion. It delayed everything this season for him. He's finally back with Scranton, getting some games in. He did play center field with Scranton, which is kind of something of note because he didn't do that last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why some people raised an eyebrow and said, are they getting him ready for center field at Yankee Stadium?
Could be.
Would you, another hypothetical, would you redo that Andrew Miller trade?
Oh, yes, I see that here. No. I like Frazier.
I also say no because then just to Sheffield, because that's how they got him in that deal too.
Right. Yeah. People forget that Sheffield was part of that. And now they have the option, if they wanted to trade Frazier and Sheffield for like a guy like a Fulmer, a Bumgarner, or a Hamels, which is ridiculous. Cashman is literally just a magician.
And I think that the team progressed way quicker than Brian Cashman thought. So he may have thought, well, Clint Frazier might be playing a full-time role on this team in 2018, not realizing that they were going to have a World Series contending team by 2018.
Right. No, of course. Jack Hurry actually did a really interesting interview with him recently, and he asked him what the biggest surprise was. And he said Didi with almost no hesitation. So, but I mean, it's gotta be surprising for him for sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, I think that they going into the season, they certainly expected a World Series, but when they made that trade back in 2016, They were not eyeing the 2018 World Series as something. It was further down the line, which is why we saw them trade for all those young kids.
Yep.
Okay, what do we have next?
From Joel Tome at JRTome10. How does the lineup change when Bird returns? Does he just bat sixth to start, or could he eventually slot between Sanchez and Stanton in the five spot?
So we kind of talked about the roster when Bird returns, but as far as the lineup goes, I think they'll ease Bird into it because he's not going to come out just, you know, banging because he has been delayed all this time. He's going to have to play rehab games. So yeah, I could see the sixth spot as somewhere where he starts.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. Didi is your clear-cut three hitter now, I think. But I think Boone also likes to mix it up a little bit, depending on the matchups and all of his binder or whatever. So I think the sixth spot is reasonable, and I think that's probably where you're seeing, because you're not going to bat Sanchez sixth. It's too far down in the order.
I agree, because then you're kind of wasting probably an at-bat or two every week where he just doesn't get up because it's too far down in the order. Yep. So I would put Bird lower to start, and if he starts raking, then you move him up. I mean, Stanton still has not started to hit. Every time it looks like he's going to start to hit, he goes back the next day. Like, he had the two homers in Houston, and then he struck out, I believe, two times in each of his next three games. So it's going to come. We keep saying that every week. Scott and I say Stanton's going to start hitting, but when is it going to start? When is he going to start hitting? We don't know. So
that's possibly the craziest thing about this whole run that this team's on, is that he's just been mediocre through it all.
Yeah. Mediocre. I would even say mediocre to bad.
Yeah, because I would say so. He had the one game in Houston, and then he's been pretty much invisible.
Yeah. And there's a lot of at bats where he just looks overmatched, and he strikes out, and he looks horrible. And we kind of saw that with Judge last year when he was in his August, you know, slump, where he looks like he can't even come close to hitting a beach ball, never mind a baseball. And that kills rallies a lot of time.
Yeah. I think Brian was right. Like, he hit it right on the money when he said he's just a streaky hitter. Cause I remember even last year in Miami, he started out slow. And then by June, like the last 100 games of the season is when he went to that closed stance. And then like he had a month, like 3 months where he was just hitting, get a notification about a Giancarlo Stanton home run like every hour.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm not giving up on Stanton by any means. It's just, I think that when you're talking about lineup construction, how long do you stick with Stanton in the cleanup spot if he's not doing cleanup things?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then, hey, maybe in regards to this question, we see Bird jump him to get the lefty out in front of him, see if that changes things up, if that helps, drop Stanton down to five, even maybe six, if he's still really struggling. But there's only so, like, how many more times? I know they're winning games, but, you know, they're not going to go 15-1 in a 16-game stretch every week, so every 2 weeks.
20 minutes ago, you said they're not going to lose another game.
No, I know, but I was kidding. But, no, but realistically, like, I could see him getting dropped to as low as probably six in the order. So then that could change things when Bird returns. Like, so say Stanton is still struggling up until around Memorial Day weekend. When Bird comes back, then maybe he could get dropped there. But yeah. I think until then, he'll probably be the four hitter.
Yeah, he will still carry this team at one point this season, and I cannot wait for it.
Yeah, no, me neither.
The next question is from Brian. He says, Gary Sanchez has five pass balls this year and has caught 200 innings. That is 0.25 pass balls allowed per inning. Last year, his rate was 0.18. Yankees pitchers have also thrown 20 wild pitches with him catching, while with Romine, they've thrown zero. Yes, I know, in fewer innings. But what do you think, Sanchez has made necessary improvements behind the plate? And are the 20 wild pitches just a coincidence? And we should also note that Gary Sanchez had another pass ball, a very ugly pass ball, on Sunday with Holder pitching.
Yeah, so for me, it's just like his mechanics. The one today with Holder, I guess it's kind of hard to explain like verbally without like showing you, but like his hand like turns to the left instead of, no, I'm sorry, turns, goes down and to the right with his glove like facing up, with his fingers facing up, and he gets locked in there. Like I replay that in my head every time, that a major league catcher can't just square it up. Like, that's catching 101. That's the fundamentals of catching. And he just, sometimes he just has that mental lapse, and it costs them. It costs them so many times, and just always with a guy on third base. It drives me nuts. And then his blocking, like he's just slow to me.
Your description of it when you were describing the direction it moved reminded me of Back into the Left with the JFK headshot. You probably don't get that reference because you're a lot younger, and I don't even remember it because I was obviously not alive then. But Anyway, I agree. It seems to always come in key spots. I wonder if it's like he is second guessing himself, where he knows there's a runner on third base and he has to be perfect. And that's when we see him be imperfect.
Yeah, that could definitely be it. I mean, the one Chapman was really wild. I'm not going to blame Gary for that. If he caught one of those, great. You know, that saves a run there. But
I mean, Chapman was throwing 100 mile an hour tailing fastballs to the backstop. I don't think you can really blame Sanchez on that. I mean, it doesn't matter who you have back there. You could have like Johnny Bench back there, and he's probably not catching that stuff.
Yeah, I don't think Yadier Molina is either.
Yeah, and Chapman was super wild on Friday. He also hit a batter. It was the first blown save we've seen him have all year. He's been really good this year. After the game, Chapman said it was miscommunication on that last wild pitch, that Sanchez was expecting something different. And I was kind of thinking about this, like, was he expecting a slider, or was he expecting like different location? Or, I mean, it seems like with Chapman, especially in a key spot, he's probably going to his fastball. I don't really know how you have miscommunication there.
Yeah, it could have been about location, though, I would say.
But he threw it.
I would have to go back and look at where he was set up. But you can't have that happen, though. Like, you got to be better than that.
But even if he's expecting up and in location, the thing was still so wild that I don't know if it would have made a difference. So
yeah, that's kind of weird. I almost feel like the thing with Holder today could have also been a miscommunication, just because how he got handcuffed, like he was expecting something else. It was actually a changeup, the pitch that he dropped today that went to the backstop.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is, I don't know. We got on Gary Sanchez a ton last summer for the way he was not blocking balls. He was really good to start the season. He did not have, I think he didn't have his first pass ball until like 2 weeks into the season, and then it kind of all came on a flood, and he had like three of them in two games. So I don't know if it's fatigue. I don't know, like you said, if it's just a mechanics-wise or if it's a mental lapse, but yeah, there are situations where Gary Sanchez needs to be better. It's like the one thing still about his game that I'm still seeing as the glaring weakness.
Yeah, I've just kind of accepted that he's going to be just kind of a subpar defensive catcher, especially blocking balls. But I mean, I think he does a good job calling games.
I do. Well, Sonny Gray would disagree with you.
Yeah, no, he would. He would. But I mean, generally, I don't think CeCe ever shakes him off.
No, CeCe actually said that. He said he credited Gary Sanchez to the game in Anaheim. And, I mean, Sanchez was catching Herman's no-hitter today. So, we can't just overlook the fact that you can't just only blame Gary Sanchez or only give credit to Austin Romine when a pitcher pitches well. How about when a pitcher pitches well with Sanchez behind the plate? Does he get credit for that? He should.
No, sure, sure. So, I mean, there's obviously that's the biggest drawback to his game, but I think he's probably an above average game caller, and you know what he's going to give you at the plate. So if this is the only thing, then you just have to hope it doesn't happen in big spots in October, really.
Yes, that is my worst nightmare.
Yeah.
What's the next mailbag?
From Jason M. Yankees were lucky on that play on Friday when Didi almost got hurt. Because of the shift, nobody was there to cover the bag, or they just had miscommunication. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that was a weird play. I was actually at the game, sitting in a suite, no big deal. But
Delta?
No, it was the SAP level suites. Rich and I, Yankees comped us a couple tickets, which was very nice of the Yankees.
Nice.
So. Yeah, it was fun. And a great game to go to, wild game. But I saw the whole stadium, the air just was sucked out of the stadium when Didi was laying on the ground, and we were not sure if he was hurt at first, because I couldn't really see it from where I was sitting that he got kicked in the back of the head on the slide. At first, I thought he like jammed a wrist or jammed a shoulder or something, and I'm saying, oh God, this is like the worst possible situation. Like one of the only, he may be the number one player, the position player the Yankees can't lose is their shortstop, Didi, their number three hitter right now. And for a second, I thought that's what we had.
Yeah, no, he's definitely the number one guy that if he went down, that would be a Category 5 disaster. That would be a disaster if he got seriously hurt. But like you said, with the shifts, it's weird because every play and every batter is different. So guys are in just such unorthodox positions that like it's almost hard to get the instincts to know what to do when you're anticipating what you're going to do next with the ball.
Right.
Because everybody's just so out of whack.
Exactly. So the play was they were shifting to the right field side because it was a lefty batter up. So Didi was kind of behind the second base bag. Gleyber was in the deep second base hole, and it was hit sort of in between the both of them. And so it seemed like what Didi should have done is gone to cover the bag, and Gleyber should have fielded it. But Didi went and fielded the ball and then realized, oh shit, there's no shortstop running over for me to flip to. I have to beat Lindor to second base. And the only way for me to do that is dive head first. And he kind of got a little toe in the back of the head. He was fine. But what it made me realize is that the Yankees need to be on the same page here, because someone could have gotten injured, one, and two, they could have not gotten the out.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. I'm just happy he didn't have like a concussion. Him coming out with the helmet Saturday was hilarious.
Oh yeah, it's great.
So funny.
And he said after the game on Friday, and he said, they asked me what day it was. I said, May the 4th be with you. It's the reason why we love Didi's, because he says that and then comes out the next day with the jockey helmet.
Yeah. No. Guy's awesome right now.
This team's having so much fun.
Yep.
Owen is the next one. He says, I was wondering what you guys think about John Sterling's home run call for Torres. And it is, this is Gleyber Day. He is the Gleyber of the month. Rate it 1 to 10.
3.7.
What is a 10 to you? Which one of his home run calls is a 10? Are there any 10s?
Text message was my favorite.
Okay. Interesting.
And I take that back. An A-bomb from A-Rod was my favorite.
Yeah. There was
nothing like that. That was his 10 out of 10 call.
I loved when you'd hear in the same inning or even back to back, an A-bomb from A-Rod and then a Thriller by Godzilla, because just the whole World War II with the atomic bomb on Japan, it was just such a cluster, but I loved it because that's what makes John Sterling, John Sterling.
A lot of racial, cultural problematic.
Just a lot of problematic stuff that probably he could only get away with back in 2004, 2005 and not have gotten away with in 2018.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I agree. It's a, what'd you say, 3.7 or something? Yeah.
Yeah, 3.7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely.
Honestly, the Giancarlo one is kind of growing on me a little bit, just because he's so stubborn that he's just gonna stick with it.
Like, okay,
it's unbelievable.
It? Can you repeat it right now? Because I can't repeat it to you.
Giancarlo non si può stop parlo, I think.
Okay, it's better than I would have done.
Italian in high school.
Nice. Yeah, like I said, I've said this about Sterling before, is that second grade rhymes are his bread and butter, and that's what he needs to stick with.
Yeah, this is Gleyber Day, and he's the Yeah, that doesn't.
It's like instead of he's the flavor of the month, he's the Gleyber of the month, I think is what he was going for.
I don't know, man. That's bad.
Yeah, it's not his best effort.
That's not great.
He's getting old. I don't know.
He
how
is.
Many,
he's going to be 80 on July 4th, I think.
Yes, you are right. July 4th is the perfect birthday for John Sterling. He is as American as baseball and apple pie is John Sterling. They need to shift that saying. It's just as American as John Sterling.
God couldn't have birthed him at a more perfect date.
Okay, so the last mailbag question was tweeted at us about 1,000 times, and it was, should the Yankees take a shot on Matt Harvey? The Dark Knight era is over in Queens.
It's really unbelievable to me, man, that's over already. It's crazy.
Ever since he walked off the mound of the World Series in 2015, it has been a complete disaster for Matt Harvey.
Yeah, it's been a downhill slide. An Adriana Lima thing with Julian Edelman taking his girl didn't help. And then he like didn't show up. I think he went golfing. He was seen out in L.A. at a nightclub when he was supposed to be someplace else or
something.
Well,
the thing I loved about that is that he was at L.A. at a nightclub and they were in San Diego. They weren't even playing the Dodgers. He drove 2.5 hours north to go party.
I didn't know that. That's
classy. It's beautiful. It's like, I guess he couldn't. The only thing better would have been he just goes south of the border and went to Tijuana.
Yeah, just go to Tijuana and do cocaine and hookers probably.
But yeah, I mean, Matt Harvey, I was reading something about him on the, I forget where it was, I think it was USA Today, just talking about how he was distant all season, and especially after he got demoted to the bullpen, it just seemed like he didn't care, didn't want to try anymore. And it kind of, like, in all seriousness, is sad for a guy with his talent level. Like, I thought he was going to be the next Roger Clemens. Like, that's the kind of moose he looked like he was going to be. And then to just, like, not give a shit anymore kind of sucks.
Yeah, but I think he did it to himself. But when your velocity goes from 98 to 92, it's tough to learn how to be CC Sabathia overnight. You know what I mean? Like, he had to kind of force himself to be that kind of finesse pitcher because he couldn't blow away people like he did in 2015 when they went on that World Series run. And there's a lot of off the field stuff that played into it. Honestly, I think they ruled this out. Like, the Yankees are definitely not interested, I think they said, but I would have been interested, to be honest with you.
Well, it's so what they're going to, they DFA'd him. So he's going to go through waivers. I don't know if he, I don't think he's been claimed yet. I haven't seen anything. I imagine
I think they have 5 more days to either trade him or release him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I think someone will take a shot on him, right?
I think so. Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely.
It's just, will he agree to go? He didn't agree to go to the minors with the Mets. So will he agree to go to the minors with another team?
Yeah, no, that's the biggest question. I mean, I guess if he has a minor league, if the only thing he has is a minor league deal, then he's going to have to, unless he wants to just hang it up. Do we know how much money he's made?
Well, I know he was making $5.6 million this year.
Oh, he was. All right, so he was getting paid, but he never hit his big lick that he would have hit.
If he was going to be a free agent this year, and he's a Boris guy. So, like, he was probably eyeing that $200 million contract. Not, obviously, recently, but after his 2015 season, he's eyeing, like, I'm going to make $25 million a year. Yeah.
Yeah. $200 million deal he probably would have gotten. I mean, but who knows in today's free agent market. But now Scott Boras is like, fuck. Like, this is over.
Well, Scott Boras has enough money, let's be honest.
No, yeah, yeah. But I mean, yeah, you're right. He probably doesn't even feel bad. You remember last week he was at the Angels game just creepily.
Yes. Like,
that was very scary.
Yeah. Yeah. It's scary. Whenever you've got Scott Boras's player, it's always scary because you know he's just going to take you to the bitter end of free agency. Like, do you remember when Jared Weaver went behind his back and took a hometown discount in Anaheim, like mid-season? Like, Scott Boras disowned him.
Vaguely. I vaguely remember that.
Because yeah. Boras, I think, like, pretty much has a, like, it hits a precedent. Like, you are going to free agency.
Yeah. He was freaking out about the Moustakas thing.
Yeah. Yeah, Harvey, I don't know. I don't see the Yankees taking a shot on him. I think that it would probably have been the Mets fans' worst nightmare, if Harvey signed with the Yankees and then actually is good with the Yankees. I think they would just, that would be it for Mets fans.
That would be it.
Yeah.
That would be so it. If he came and just was incredible, like, right away, can you imagine? Like back in 2015 for him, and they're all like, what? Like, this is literally my worst nightmare.
It's like Matt Harvey is the Yankees midseason acquisition that turns the whole rotation around. Would have been beautiful to see.
That would have been banana land, but yeah. That's not happened.
Well, thanks everybody who submitted mailbag questions. A lot of good ones this week. To do so, go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. You can also tweet at the show at Yankees Podcast. Dom, I know you've been tweeting a bunch from the podcast account. We definitely appreciate those in-game gifts and stuff like that. Where can people find you on Twitter?
At It's Your Boy Dom. And the cha is a CHA.
I love that. How old were you when you made that?
Probably like 14. And I thought it was so cool, but now I'm just not going to change it. You know, it's my Twitter handle. I can't.
You can't change it at this point. also, call the voicemail line 646-480-0342. I bet some people fired that thing up after the Glaber walk off today. Dom, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we'll talk to you guys on Thursday.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out, or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
Fucking Yankees, motherfucker. Stop. Dan with the two bombs back-to-back, baby, to take two out of three at Houston. Come on, motherfucker. It's the Yankees, baby. Baby Bombers, we're coming at you full force. We don't give a fuck. We're the fucking best team in the league. Somebody wants to take it from us, they got to. You gotta come and take it. It's the New York Yankees. Judge is fucking swinging the gavel down. Smack! Done. World Series 2018 New York Yankees. Let's fucking go.
Hey, hey, hey. Danny in England. Loving the temperatures over here. They're going faster, faster than the Yankees are. Rising up the charts, playing superb baseball. We bashed up the Blue Jays, terrorized the Twins, hammered the Halos, and annihilated the Astros in games 2 and 3. Can't wait for the closing game of the series in Houston tonight, and it's bring on the Indians in the Bronx. Keep up the good work, chaps. Love you all. Speak soon. Bye now.
Yo, what the hell is happening in the Bombers 7? Oh my fucking god. I'm listening to Sterling right now, just getting so pissed. What the fuck is this meltdown? How the hell are we losing this right now? And the game is tied at 3. Let's go, Yankees. Get your head out the ass. Chad Green, fucking do better.
I don't understand why we have replay. If when you review it, it's still getting wrong. Unbelievable. What are they doing there? That ball was a foot away from Bregman. This is absurd. I'm ready to lose it, but I'm very under control right now. The rest I'm not.
What's up, y'all? It's Boy Lance from Mississippi. And this team is on a tear right now, y'all. Freaking, this game today, like I said, it was a final sweep. And this game was fantastic. Domingo was unstoppable today. Fantastic game. And then Dylan came in to a fantastic 7th inning. But the only thing that was questionable is when Boone put him back out for the 8th. That's when shit hit the wall, but we came back cleaned up. And our offense picked it up. All that matters. And then Glaber Torres. Oh my gosh, this guy's a freak. This team is amazing. This was the perfect push to go into the Yankees. I mean, the Yankees Ripoff series. This is big for the team, y'all. And this is going to be a fantastic series. I'm so looking forward to it. Go Yankees.
Alright, I get it. You take your mom out with the no-hitter. He's a new guy. But why do you put Betances in for one more inning? There's currently two guys on, no outs, just to win the game. We need to win the game, Aaron Boone. What are you doing to me? And Holder's warming up in the bullpen? Oh my Lanta!
Man, what a great shooting by the Yankees. Way to close it out. The Rook came through with the game winning hit. Steady last night. Man, it was just a great series overall. Even though Boone tried to blow it, putting in Green, you know what I'm saying? Hey, me personally, I would have went with Robinson, a.k.a. Houdini. But hey, it is what it is. Yankees on a roll right now. Let's just keep riding this way back to the Bronx. Face the Cleveland Indians. Let's get it. It's fucking Glaber Day. Glaber Torres. Rookie. Earning his 10 strikes. Let's go. Man. 15 out of 16. Sweeping the Indians. Man, look, I can't wait till Tuesday. Oh. Boston, come get some. Come get your ass one. Let's go. Glaber Day.
Wow. Some incredible run going on right now. 15 out of 16. Go Yankees. Can you hear me? Go Yankees.
Take over.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.